Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. This is a question about what's called indefinite life extension. In other words, permanently stopping or reversing aging. And the questioner goes on, this may become a reality within this century. It would not make a person indestructible, he observes, but it could feasibly allow them to live for hundreds of years longer, as long as they never encounter severe disease or a traumatic injury. Before I go on, I must add that the great destroyer in history, in historical terms, is not disease or, you know, automobile accident, etc., which is what I assume you mean by traumatic injury. It's living in an irrational society. No earthquake ever equaled the destruction of human life caused by Hitler or Stalin, or potentially now by Obama, who belongs in the same category, although not yet fully worked out. And then he said, it seems that most of the opposition to this idea of stopping or reversing aging comes from religionists and anti-technology leftists. What is your take on this question? I think it's 100% good development. Why in the world would anybody in general want to suffer from aging, which is the worst thing ever conceived by a malevolent God, if there were one, when you could overcome it and have that much more healthy and enjoyable lifespan? So from that point of view, I'm strongly in favor of this type of work. Unfortunately, I've been told by researchers in the field that the Food and Drug Administration would never give a validation to the attempt to stop aging, because that would cause the government such revenue loss in Medicare and Social Security, etc., which were calculated to last an age span of 65, that the whole government is geared to prohibit what you call indefinite life extension. I don't know firsthand that this is really what is happening, but it's very plausible to me that that is what is happening. One thing I would say, though, if there is permanent stopping or reversing of aging, then I believe that's a stronger argument still than what we have today, that there should be a medically assisted suicide. Because imagine living indefinitely in a condition which is anathema to you, whether because of a physical defect that prevents you from doing what you want in life, or a memory issue, or whatever it happens to be. And therefore, it's just simply the same argument in spades. No one has a right to dictate to someone else when they can end their life. And if a doctor or a friend agrees to help, and there is a way of establishing that this is not murder, this is done with your cooperation, and it is easy to do that, then this would become, in my mind, a further argument in favor of a medically assisted suicide. How does an ex-military warrior release his former sense of obligation of protection to all the weak in the world and eliminate caring for the foolish and self-destructive and instead focus on my own rational, selfish, emotional, and social goals. Well, I think the first thing that you should do, sir, call you sir because of the implicit rank that you offer, you should go back and re-identify why the obligation to protect the weak and help the foolish, etc., is involved in your job. Because if you think about it carefully, you will see that it is not involved as an altruistic self-sacrifice that you now have to get rid of. A proper soldier, assuming he can escape conscription and he is able to do it by choice, a proper soldier goes in for selfish reasons, not because the weak are too helpless or the foolish are too stupid, but because himself, his loved one, his family, his country are at risk. And he wants those preserved for his own sake. If you see it that way, then you will not see your discharge as the entry into another world. It will be the same world with the same moral principles, but the context will now change. You will no longer, if it's no longer war, have to worry about protecting those on your side. They will have to do what they can do, and you do what you can do. Don't let people tell you all of your heroism is proof of the superiority of altruism. And also, I've written on that, but I can't remember. Oh, the West Point speech, I think. If you look up the speech I gave at West Point. Is it valid to refrain from sex with a great woman if commitment with her is impossible, sexual commitment. For example, she's just not looking for a commitment. Or because one of us is about to leave the country for an indefinite time. It seems to me that indulging in sex in these kinds of cases are an exercise in futility. I do not think I would be able to enjoy it. So is it rational to abstain from having sex with a woman who you know represents your fundamental values just because you know a committed relationship is absolutely impossible between the two of you? You know, when you say the commitment is not possible because she's leaving town, etc., you make that a little more specific when you say, this is a woman who, I'm quoting what I just said, a woman who you know represents your fundamental values. Now, that is a pretty big statement. You're not saying a woman I like. You're saying a woman I love in a way that you're lucky to meet one in a lifetime or two. Because that is both philosophical and at the same time extremely personal and involves many options along with fundamental virtues and philosophy. If you have truly found in this world a woman that is all that to you, my first question is, how can you give that up? How can you do it? That is such a tremendous value. Now you say she is, perhaps, she's not looking for a commitment. Now that changes it in a big time way. She's not looking for a commitment, including for you, at least not at this time. Well, if that's the case, you don't know whether she does represent your fundamental values or not. And that becomes a big difference. If she likes you, but she doesn't want to get involved too strongly, you don't know what her fundamental values are or what you mean to her. So that's a more legitimate conclusion on your part. I'm not going to get involved in a commitment because I don't know what I'm dealing with. Although that's not what you're saying, because you put that in the same category with a woman who has to leave the country for an indefinite period of time. If you knew about that woman, that she really was, your fundamental values really held them, but she's leaving the country. Before I would work out a statement on commitment and should you do it, if not, I would look at the particular thing. Why does she have to leave the country? Why for an indefinite time? If it's a career issue, is this just like a 1 year or 18 month training, meeting people in the field, studying under one of the masters, etc.? In other words, is it an educational issue? If so, and she is that to you what you say she is, you have many ways of not letting her go. Unless she says her work is in Mars and she'll be back in 40 years. Then, practically speaking, she's dead as far as you're concerned. But if she's moving to England or Oregon or wherever it is, are there means of communication? Can you make use of email and Skype and telephone? I mean, there's today endless means of keeping a long-distance relationship. Now, I wouldn't recommend it as a regular lifetime thing, but within a reasonable period of time, and you have to find out, why does she have to go that long? Is it reasonable? And is she important enough to wait for? I know couples that, for various reasons, very close, married happily, but they have reasons to live in two different states. And their solution to that is they see each other periodically, but they spend each evening, I believe it's 1.5 hours, have spent 1.5 hours, catching up on every detail, knowing, expressing what they feel. Now, in my opinion, that is not as good as, you know, being able to live together, so that you have the flesh against flesh in addition, but within limits. I would be very careful about saying, oh, she's perfect, but she's far away. That distance and perfection are not compatible. You better think a long time before you say, oh, it just won't work out, she's too far away. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.